Communicators, Dr. Charles Marshall and Dr. Stephen Ward.
This sound was recorded on June the 1st, 1964, medium Leslie Flint.
Sometimes, Rose, probably are very puzzled as to what we must be doing, if anything at all.
Yes.
Well, I can assure you that though we may not sometimes seem to be doing anything, as far as you're concerned, that is, nothing seems to be happening, often a great deal is happening behind the scenes. We're all the time trying desperately to keep the whole manifestation of the power circulating. We may not be speaking, but we're certainly trying to hold on and to do what we can and send through someone to speak, someone whom we may feel can be helpful and informative. But I don't think you can ever realize the many complications which do exist in communication, even at the very best of times, even when perhaps afterwards you've said, "Oh, this was a wonderful, wonderful sitting." I don't think you can possibly realize how much effort and how much work and how much indeed has to be done to even produce a whisper, let alone an evening where possibly the conversations have been varied and many, and perhaps some soul, for instance, has been able to convey a great deal over perhaps quite a lengthy period, even to speak in itself. If a few brief moments is, in some instances, in some cases, a great effort. Sometimes the conditions are so conducive that we can, indeed we do, bring through a great deal. But sittings are variable to such an extent that even at the very moment of sitting, one can never be sure as to what the results, if any, are going to be. It's very complicated.
I know that, Dr. Darling. I know all that, but I just like to hear my voice in the dark and hope that you can hear it too.
Well, of course, we naturally like to hear your voice. And we naturally like to respond to it. But quite often it's not necessary for you to speak. We're very conscious of your thoughts. And quite often we try to answer your unspoken ones, sometimes with some success and sometimes perhaps with failure, but we do as best we can under the prevailing conditions as they may exist on each occasion when we come. As you all know, it's nothing new really, but sometimes I think it's good to reiterate it because a lot of people, they just do not understand. I don't think that even many of the so-called spiritualists of long standing and experience ever fully realize or ever fully understand the many difficulties that have to be contended with. And these difficulties are not necessarily only on our side, sometimes they're very much on your side.
Yes.
Sometimes they're purely physical, sometimes they're purely on a mental plane. All manner of influences sometimes get to work and have to be seem to have to be brought into line, as it were, so that it can be as clear as possible, a channel of clear enough at least to make some definite sensible contact. We must remember that thoughts to us are so real in themselves. They can be now, of course, very real on your side, but believe me, to us a thought is a reality, a living thing, and sometimes we have to contend with all manner of thoughts from all manner of people, all types of individuals, good and bad. It's not always easy to keep a clear channel. One of our greatest difficulties, and often a struggle, to keep a clear channel. Your mind.
It's very difficult,
am I? No. Oh. I'm just talking like this because it's keeping the vibrations going, partly that, and secondly, I think it's worth reiterating, and thirdly, while I'm sort of holding the fort,
yes,
someone else is being prepared to come through and talk to you. Oh. In other words, in a sense, because I'm an old hen at it now, I know how to communicate reasonably well, I hope, and also without utilizing too much power, because in making the effort, for me, it isn't the same as it would be for
yourself. The one who is coming, is he hearing and watching you while you're talking?
Oh, I presume he's hearing, and I am sure he's watching. There again, it must be very difficult for you to understand when I try to explain the fact about watching. Of course we can see, of course we are obviously aware of our own conditions and our own environment, and we're also aware of the conditions and the environment when we come down to you. It's almost as if we are able to perceive in two spheres at the same time. And a good communicator, one who's used to communicating, knows how to hold on to the material aspect of this whole business of communication to such a successful way that he is able to communicate at all. But you do get, of course, people who are trying to retain their thought force in regard to the things they wish to convey. In so doing, lose the physical contact, and in consequence, the result is pretty abortive. It's often,
yes,
very difficult, because it's like, in a sense, trying to do two things at the same time.
Yes.
Hold the thought that one has brought with one to transmit or transfer through to you on a more material level, and be conscious and aware of the material conditions in which you are existing, in which we are trying to transplant, if you like, or transfer that thought from our own vibration. It can be, and then there's a physical aspect of communication, the transmission of thought into sound via the voice box, which at all times is being affected by the conditions. Even at the best of times, the conditions must and will fluctuate. A lot depends on so many things. It's a very confusing thing, communication. Not so bad for those of us who are more used to it, but very confusing to newcomers. And often, for instance, the simplest question you may ask them may confuse them. It may sort of make them lose the contact, trying to regain the thought of the answer of the thought that have been given out to them. I mean, they may want to convey something and they've got to loosen the hold on the physical to retain the thought or obtain the thought to transmit back to you. And by the time possibly they've got the thought or the answer to the question that's been asked, they've lost the physical contact to get it over.
Mm.
And that's often why other souls who are experienced step in and transmit, sometimes indeed in the first person, for that person who endeavoured to make the contact.
Yes, yes.
It's very difficult and very confusing, and also there is this asserting one's own personality to such an extent that one, in a sense, is recognisable in the voice, either in the voice itself or the method or manner of speech, in so many other ways. I mean, the whole point is that we are trying to do certain things, various things, you might say, all at the same time. And only a very experienced communicator really can be what one might term something of a success at it. And even he or she may from time to time vary. I suppose the miracle is that we do get what we get through. But nevertheless, we do know that there are no, in a sense, no limits, because we have experienced much over the years of communication, when we've been able to do a great deal, when we've done very little, sometimes when we've been able to achieve little or nothing at all. Conditions in themselves, whether it's sitting for you or whether it is sitting for someone else, a medium in himself can do little or nothing. All he can do is be as passive as possible and as cooperative as possible, giving out his power as best he can, even unconsciously, you might say. But the point is that it is a very complicated thing in any form of mediumship, and more so in this.
Yes.
That's one reason why I've been so surprised at the success of Stephen. For a complete newcomer, I think he's done so well. He seems to have been able to assert his person. thinking from the first instance, of course, obviously, he was a very, and he is still, a very strong personality. I think that he, whatever profession he'd have got in, he'd have made his mark. I think that he could have been a great success in various ways on earth, and the tragedy is that his life was so spoilt. But nevertheless, on this side, his personality is such that his eagerness and his his desiring of knowing all he can and assimilating knowledge, and the anxiety that he has of making a contact, the desire for the contact, and wishing to know the ins and the outs, he's a probar, he's a very serious person.
Yes.
There's not anything really, I mean, he may sometimes, by his speech, give an appearance of being a flippant type of individual, but he's not really. He's very deep thinking, and
he is
sincere, and a very genuine person, and a very kind one. I think, personally, he's been most remarkable. I'm hoping in a moment or two he'll be able to get up and speak. I'm holding the fort, in a sense, for him tonight.
I suppose he's finding it difficult.
In a kind of way, he is. But, it's something rather personal to himself, in a way. It's, I think he's trying to eradicate some certain material thought that has impinged itself upon him since the last few days. But I think, anyway, just a moment.
Yes, all right, Doctor. Yeah. It's rather interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you heard?
Heard what?
All right, talk about it. You've got through all that.
Oh, yes, thanks so much.
I'm very well.
Good, so am I. Extremely well.
Good.
I keep popping back and forth, you know, keeping an eye on things and taking an interest, to some extent, anyway, in material things, but they don't have the hold on the interest for me that they did. But nevertheless, I can't completely, as it were, release myself from certain aspects of material life, you know.
Yes.
But one of the things I find most difficult to bear, and I don't wish to be unkind, but it is this hypocritical religious humbug. I suppose I shouldn't say it, but it does rile me more than anything else.
What is that? All right, you'll carry on.
This religious humbug.
Oh, yes.
Still, that's something that happened very recently, rather. Got under my skin, but I suppose it's stupid, but anyway, I didn't really want to talk about that. How are you?
Well, it's just humbug, but, oh yes, do talk about it. It's rather interesting to me, Stephen, if you can, or if not. I think I realise what you mean.
You do, do you?
Yeah.
I said, you do?
Yes.
Yeah. Poor old church.
Well, you were here this afternoon.
Oh, yes.
You were? That's what you're alluding to.
Yes, conversation.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I came early. I came because I wanted to sort of prepare the way. I know this may sound stupid, but I have found that if I'm going to communicate, say, in the evening, if I can sort of come early in the day, and there's sort of, I don't know how to explain this, but it's as if I get into the conditions, I suppose, or anyway, I tune myself in some strange kind of way. I don't know how it's done, but all I know is that I'm conscious of you, and I'm conscious of what I'm hoping to achieve in the evening in the way of communication. And there was this religious sort of intolerant, sort of stupid, sort of business going on.
I
was listening to the conversation, and quite frankly, there was some stupid priest here, From outside, I mean, it's sort of, I don't know whether you could say he was earthbound. You would hardly expect a priest to be earthbound, but certainly this man was an odd creature, to say the least of it. And he was sort of, I don't know, he was putting words into this person's mouth, but I think he must have been in a kind of way. It was as if there was a dual personality at work there. And it was most interesting, at the same time, most infuriating. And I thought to myself, well, it's not for me to enter into this. And I thought, oh dear, this is going to affect the conditions and vibrations a bit. I mustn't sort of get mixed up in this. And actually, it was all rather annoying. I suppose I shouldn't have been, but I couldn't help thinking
how... It's very annoying to me.
How stupid it was.
Yes. Yes, I'm so glad you heard that. I was most irritated, but I kept quiet. How sweet of you to come and hear all this, tell me.
Part of this tape has not been re-recorded because it is personal to the sitter.
Well, I don't see how anyone can really be completely, it seems to me it's all very well. It seems that you can't avoid having to kill in some shape or form. I suppose all life lives on each other. I mean, I suppose in a sense it can't be avoided.
Well, nature is very, very cruel, you know.
Well, it's strong. The instinct, you see.
Yes.
And there's another thing that always puzzles me when people say, oh, well, God is good, God wants you to do this and wants you to do that, as if anyone really knows, really. It sounds stupid, I think, but all sorts of things in nature, apart from anything else, are also sort of fundamentally cruel.
Of course. Oh, Stephen, you'd be just the one to find out about these sort of things and tell me, because these things puzzle me tremendously.
Well, I try to see it this way. I know it sounds sacrilegious, but I don't believe that the world was created by a supreme being or God. You see,
no.
I don't believe in God in the orthodox accepted sense. I think that man came into being through generations of change. I presume in the early stages he wasn't man as we know it. And he gradually evolved and changed and changed and evolved until he became, as we know, man more or less today. And I suppose the primeval instinct to keep alive, men killed each other. They still do, for that matter. And but this time, of course, they do it in the name of religion, which makes the bloody sight worse. But in those days, they had no religion anyway. Or at least they started to find some sort of religion. They began to worship the only things they could see, like the sun and the moon and the stars and so on. At least they were intelligent enough to worship something they could see that gave them some warmth or some comfort. Nowadays, of course, it's the fashion to worship something which you don't see and don't really know anything all about, which man himself likes to assume that he understands and knows, or tries to understand and know, and he hasn't got a clue anyway. And it all seems so crazy to me. I'm only concerned with finding out as best I can, whatever method I can that is good anyway, what truth is. I'm not concerned with what a few bow-legged parsons tell me from the pulpit because they've got a cassock on or a hassock rather or whatever it is they wear. I don't care less.
Oh, you're lovely. Oh, just the sort of man after my own heart. Oh, my goodness.
To me it all seems so stupid, because if the truth's really known and they were honest men, truly honest men,
yes,
they would admit the fact they don't know. But they go round the bloody mulberry bush and they go here, there and everywhere, bar up a straight road, and try and explain something they don't even know themselves and won't admit they don't know. It all seems so damn stupid to me.
Oh, lovely, Stephen. Oh, say some more, do.
Well, I think that if one is going to be, as I see it, intelligent,
yes,
one has got to have a completely and perfectly open mind to receive, and if you can't accept something, in a sense possibly reject it, or even put it to one side and say, well, I don't know the answer to that, and that may be what I've been told, what I've been told may be an answer, but it doesn't satisfy me, but I'm not completely discarding it. But at the same time, I don't accept it. But people accept all sorts of weird things just because it's the thing to do, because it's been taught them for generations, because your grandfather believed it, then you must believe it. I mean, half the troubles in the world seem to be is because your great-grandparents believe certain things, it's handed down from family to family and from nation to nation, and you're expected to go on blindly through every generation accepting the accepted so-called facts, which are not facts anyway, because it's a thing to do. It all strikes me as being bloody stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
You get it in so many ways, not only in religion, you get it in politics. I mean, you get this,
yes,
this sort of thing that your country is the country, your people are the people, your flag is the flag, and that you must die for it if necessary. But those that usually send you to the death to fly to save the country or save the flag, they make quite sure they're all right. All these people who advocate these things always get themselves into a very good position where they're quite comfortable and invariably make a hell of a packet out of it too, financially. I've got no time for the establishment. Whether it's in religion or politics or what it is, it's corrupt at the top.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing more corrupt than the church at the top. Whether you take this generation or previous generations, the only thing is it gets worse in a different kind of way. Whereas in the old days they were crude in the way they treated each other, today they're a little more subtle, but they still get away with it.
I know, I can't understand this extraordinary hold that different churches have.
Well, I think it is that fundamentally every individual that's born does, whether they fully realize it or not, does wonder and does sort of desire to know something about life and where they came from and where they're going to. I mean, it isn't very long after you're born when you start going to school that you start to read and you start learning things and you begin to think for yourself and begin to wonder if there is something beyond death. When you realize that death is at its best, if you can put it like that, 80 or 90 odd years or something, is so infinitesimal in time, and man likes to feel that there's something about him that is different, and that he's different from the animal kingdom, and that he deserves to live in a life beyond so-called death, and he thinks there must be some gods of some force somewhere, and he deludes himself into various things, and he accepts religion rather blindly as a kind of an answer. He doesn't necessarily always believe it, but he pretends he does, but the whole thing seems to be so sort of, in a sense, stupid. It's as if man must have something to cling to, which in a way I understand. I think it can be, and it has been, a blessing to many people. I don't dispute that. But it seems to me that man loses his desire for truth, or to find truth, when he clings to something,
yes,
which he accepts rather madly and blindly, because his forebears did, and because it's a thing to do, and because if there is something in it, well, he's all right at the other end anyway, and if there isn't, well, he hasn't lost anything. You know, it's a sort of like a sort of insurance policy, you know.
Mm.
You pay so much each week and bend the knee in church and sing a few hymns and put a few bob in the plate. In other words, if there's something in what you believe in, then you've made your contribution and you're going to be all right, you know, you get the other side. It's all sort of, though again, even in religion, invariably, in the vast majority of people, it's selfishness.
Yes.
It's what they're going to get out of it.
And
not only over here what they're going to get out of it, if there is an over here, as they think, but also, quite often with a lot of them, what they're going to get out of it on your side,
yes,
by going to church, meeting the right people, and getting introductions into other people's houses, and listening to the latest scandal from that quarter, and perhaps getting a good business deal through somebody else who's well up in the church. You know, it's all a sort of, well, in a way, it's a sort of bartering exchange.
Right.
Well, it is, you know. I mean, there's no getting away from it. If you're in with the church, and it's, well, especially if it's one of the churches that are rather wealthy and has the right people attending it, then you get to know them in the community and you get invited, and perhaps you're dealing in certain stocks or shares, or perhaps you're in a certain line of business, and they think, oh, well, so-and-so goes to our church, I think we should give him the business, don't you? No, and it's sort of, you scratch my back, Jack, and I'll scratch yours.
Oh, quite true, Steve. there's my sentiments, as they say.
I'm not disputing the fact that the... And I wouldn't like anyone to think that I'm narrow-minded, in the sense that I don't think there's some good in religious people. I mean, I, of course there must be, there are sincere people and there are good people, but a lot of it's so full of hypocrisy. Yes. What annoys me more than anything is that this is the fact that they know. You know, that's what got me this afternoon, though, like this sort of, I know, I... Never mind. I'm jolly glad I know what I know. It's worth dying for to find out, believe me.
Anyway,
I must go, Ducky.
I'll see you
on Thursday.
What?
See you on Thursday, all being well.
Oh, I hope it'll be.